Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithtimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and today is an exciting special episode where we go on a little field trip. I was asked to speak at NoirCon, which is a convention in Philadelphia all about noir literature and film and TV and anything pertaining to noir genre. So this was recorded during a session entitled Noir and Burlesque that was facilitated by Dr. Susanna Meyer, and she will give an introduction to the other panelists. So enjoy.
I would like to offer a brief introduction of our panelists if you are interested in reading more in depth. It's either in here or on the website. And I'm going to apologize for reading from my notes. I have no memory these days. I suspect there are other people that feel the same way. So, to my right, Lulu Lollipop. I want a name like that. I don't know how you got it, but I want it.
You just played it.
That's it.
Sounds good. She's a performer, director, and costume designer with the award-winning Philadelphia Peekaboo Review. She has also studied the history of burlesque and interviewed many of the living legends in this industry, and that's the part I really like. Frank DeBlaise, I knew I'd get that one wrong. Sorry about that. You just heard all about him. Do I need to do this again?
No, I'm fine.
You're okay. Okay. But what didn't get added is he's also studied the history of TNA in the USA.
Haven't we all?
On some level.
I actually brought some visuals to pass around, and I've counted them, so I'd like them all back.
And at my very end is Dr. Timmery Schmidt, who's a sexologist and adjunct professor in human sexuality with expertise in critique of media, performance, and sexuality, and she is a burlesque performer and curator. And I'm the boring one here. I'm Dr. Susanna Meyer. I'm also a sexologist and founder of and host of the Erotic Literary Salon.
How can that be boring?
That's not boring, but I'm boring.
Oh, okay.
Where burlesque is performed occasionally along with readings of sensual words, and that's a word I coined, so we'll talk about it later. I've also studied the history of burlesque and have attended numerous burlesque performances. That's the best part. If you haven't attended one, please do. Up until this morning, what I had for the intro was we will discuss the sexual mores and its impact on burlesque, comparing the 40s and 50s, the setting for most noir fiction, and today's resurgence of this form of entertainment. But then I received a link this morning to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Did anybody read that article in the Philadelphia Inquirer about NoirCon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so I'm glad I'm saying this. And I read the following excerpt pertaining to this burlesque noir discussion for those who did not read it. They'll talk about the prevalence of strip joints in hard-boiled stories. We didn't know that, by the way. And so we will make certain to cover strip joints, and if perchance we forget, please remind us in the Q&A.
Should we do a field trip after this?
Yes.
Ooh, yes. Definitely a field trip.
Do you think the buffet is still out? Or did they put that away? Never mind.
So I'd like to start by asking Timmery about sexual mores of the 40s and 50s in the U.S.
Just in general?
Yeah, in general. Okay. What was considered acceptable behavior in public? How did people present themselves sexually in the 40s and 50s?
Well, the 40s and 50s are, as most times are, a time of great change in terms of those things. We have economics and the war driving that, and the idea that women now have jobs outside of the workplace in the 40s changes a lot about what is feminine in general. and the idea that you can still be a good wife and mother and go to some place during the day that is not your house. And so we have to change the notion of what is feminine and then therefore what is taboo. Because burlesque is, of course, all about parody of taboos. It is at its heart a satire of what the fancy people do. And so in the 40s and 50s, we see in media, at least, that idea still of housewifery. But in reality, women are starting to enter into the public economic sphere in a very different way. And with the rise of cars, of course, we have so much more accessibility for teenagers to go to the places they want to go so they can do the things that they were probably already doing but now can do in the back of a car.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
There was no sex before the 40s, just so you know. That didn't happen. But now, no. So we have those two major things. And of course, television giving people the impression of what life is like, both in terms of at the time and when we retrospectively look back at it. We see a conservatism in that media. The mainstream stuff from the 40s and 50s is, of course, very conservative. But in reality, no.
Do all of our answers have to be that thorough?
Sorry, I'm loquacious.
And bodacious, and vivacious.
I like that answer. You can do it any way you want. First of all, I knew nothing.
I knew nothing about noir until I came here, so I had to do a little research. And in researching noir in the 40s and 50s, all of a sudden I came upon a critique of research that started, the name was Silent in quotes, Sexual Revolution Began in the 1940s and 50s, not the 60s the way we thought it did. And in 2005, a young researcher decided to look at the census for information as opposed to what Kinsey had for information. Now, Kinsey took all his information from people giving him qualitative information, talking to them, telling them what they did. We all know people lie about what they do, especially when it comes to anything to do with sex. The census doesn't lie, and the numbers of births out of wedlock soared in the 40s when the men came back from the army, you know, from overseas. The victory women, these were women that literally gave up their virginity. They were doing it for these poor men that was coming back, you know? That was their way of thanking them.
Well, it was just interesting, just off of what Timmeray was saying. One day, I've been a burlesque performer for the last 12 years, and I always wondered what my grandmother thought of it, of course, and she was really supportive. But one day I did ask her, I said, what was the view of burlesque women as you were growing up? And she looked at me very seriously and said, no woman of standard would be caught speaking to a woman of burlesque. And it wasn't a judgment, it was a truth at her time. Now, on the other side, when we talk about sexuality, you know, my belief, of course, was that all of these women were prudish, and they were not the burlesque women, of course, but the normal women were prudish, and they were going home to their husbands. And as I started to delve in a little bit more to my grandmother's life, found that that wasn't the case for a woman of standard. She would always give me gifts, and I'd say, where did you get this? And she said, one of my fellas brought it back for me from the war. You know, so there was this sort of very secretive, everybody knew it existed, but this very secretive sexuality and this very secretive just life outside of the home. But that's really it.
In 1937, Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia put a ban on burlesque in New York City. That was before, there was a lot more nudity initially before. And the problem burlesque had was that it served as its own undoing by showing too much and pushing it. And then it got pushed to Atlantic City. Then after the war, it became huge, but it actually had to start over again. Because if you look at burlesque in the mid-30s, there was actually nudity. There was full-on nudity, top and bottomless. But then the social mores sort of raged against it, but then they couldn't contain it. And then it came back stronger than ever in the 40s and 50s.
And the other element of it is, it's not just the taboo, but also anything that gets that popular, you start getting crappier performers. You start seeing just like people who can't necessarily dance. And they just, you know, it's that's a thing also. And if you want to go see that thing, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to see that thing. But we also see it was a victim of its own success in terms of, you know, it didn't have the same sort of artistic merit, and therefore people that wanted to go see it for that reason were not necessarily interested. And what is really nice about the resurgence now is that because we're not fighting anything in particular, and I mean, obviously, sexuality is available everywhere now, but the draw of burlesque is it's got its distinct characteristics that still can, yes.
It's like a high class thing, though.
I think the artistic analysis of burlesque is sometimes it's overcomplicating the bottom line. Men want to see women naked. Are you with me, fellas?
And
women.
And
women.
Like,
yes.
And women want to be naked.
Women
want to see women naked.
See women naked.
Yeah, we were discussing this a little bit earlier, and it is absolutely 50% of my audience is women, both straight and gay. Women love to. I love going to titty bars, not necessarily burlesque shows. I love watching women do what they do. but what I wanted to add is, once the tassels, one of the things that I've recently found out is the reason that women were wearing pasties is it wasn't because they were covering up, it was because of the laws that changed. They had to wear something over their nipples, and they added the tassels, so if vice came in to the back of the room, it showed that they had something on their boob.
That was
the point of the tassel. And then, of course, it got worked in a beautiful, beautiful way.
And we still have tassels in Philadelphia because you have to cover your nipples if you're doing burlesque in an establishment that sells beer. So you will notice that.
Well, there is also, and we talk about that, there are still, believe it or not, as you can go to pretty much any club, you can go to different strip clubs, you know, the ones that are known as the puss bars, the ones that are known as the flasher bars, the ones that are, you know what you're going to see, even though it's legal. But even in the burlesque community, being somebody who produces shows, I'm still dealing with laws of, like, they have to have a specific license. And if they don't have this specific license, they can get in a lot of trouble for having my show, which is ridiculous. I mean, to me. I turn on the television and see worse things than I'm doing on stage. So
it's the laws are so...
Well, it's funny, in the context of noir, we talk about violence and murder and death, but there's a lot of noir, there's a lot of sex in noir. Mm-hmm. And I find we haven't discussed that a lot with a lot of these other panels. They talk about murder and death and destruction, but I think lust is one of the strongest urges going, speaking personally anyway. Bless me, Father.
And anyone can chime in on this, is all of a sudden burlesque has a resurgence out of seemingly nowhere. And where does that come from? And how are the feminists dealing with it? And how are the noir writers dealing with it? And some of you people may have to answer those questions because I won't be able to. But
right. Well, I as a fan, I think that burlesque now is a little bit, it's sort of a burlesque of burlesque. It's not as, I think initial burlesque was sort of the road to Hollywood for a lot of actresses that backslid. And I think now that the women that dance and perform, though it's wonderful, it isn't as necessary or as dangerous in their lives. They don't need to raise money. They're not as exploited. I think they're much more empowered in their performance. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, there was a
circuit for burlesque women. I mean, they did well. They made money. This is how they made their living. This is how they raised their families. This is how they did those things. It's not, that's not the life today. I mean, when people compare what I do to the Christina Aguilera burlesque movie that came out, it's like, that's not real. That's not real. It doesn't work like that. It's a dedication. It's a very expensive hobby. You're not making a living. It's a choice.
It's like being in a band.
Yeah, it's exactly like being in a band. I mean, a lot of the burlesque performers that I...
Or a noir writer, right?
a lot of the burlesque performers I know are still working in traditional modern day strip clubs and doing whatever they need to do to support themselves, and then they have this really wonderful show that they get to, instead of being pawed at, you're put on almost like a bit of a pedestal. You are a performer. I find sometimes people are, we talked a little bit about, I don't want to jump the gun, but you talked a little bit about perception, what we were talking about outside, the perception of, you know, the woman in noir and the perception of who burlesque performers are. When I'm done a show, I find that people are scared to talk to me. Like, it's this very different, where at the titty bar, people are, you know, they deserve to talk to you. They gave you a dollar. it's definitely, you're revered in a sense, and if you're good, one of the things that there's a lot of bad performers out there everywhere. There's a lot of bad writers. There's a lot of bad dancers. There's a lot of bad strippers. You can be a bad stripper. I just lost my train of thought.
Which has its charm?
Huh?
Which has its charm? Bad strippers.
Bad stripper.
They tend to lean on some other things, which can be fun for everyone.
So you mentioned the feminist perspective of it, and I think that Dita Von Teese put it in a very good way that I'm just going to paraphrase, which is that the last taboo is for the right to be, if you just want to be objectified, you want to be a hot piece of meat. And the thing is you can be a female and walk around in the world and people will do that to you, whether you ask for it or not, whether you like it or not, whether you fight back or not. Some of you live in Philadelphia, you know what I'm talking about. But if you change it to this sphere where somebody gets to choose the circumstances under which it happens, you get to make money if you choose to, but more importantly, you're in charge of it. You're in charge of when the clothes come off and how people react to it and what sort of tone you want to set. And if you want to be just a piece of meat, you have every right to choose that. That's feminism. You get to choose what you want.
Somebody was, the other day I was at work and somebody looked at me and they were like, you look like you love what you do. And I do. I love taking my clothes off. But more than that, I love that. My mother used to say, there is a seedy underbelly to your life. Yes, there is.
Amen.
And I love it. It's not just the act of removing my clothes. Being a costume designer, I love every element. I love dressing up. I love sparkly things. I love being seen as beautiful. But more than that, I love looking into the audience and seeing desire. I want that. Whether it's a tiny little corner titty bar and somebody's as close to you, I want to see that you want me. And I choose that.
It's
a good drug. I've been in the audience. I know what that know it from the other end. How many of you live in Philadelphia or close by? If you've not seen the Peekaboo review, go.
I'm
so organized. I didn't bring any flyers. But our next show is December 15th and 16th. We're only in Philadelphia every 2 to 3 months. We reproduce the show and then tour. But the 15th, we're at the Trocadero, which is a historic burlesque house. And the 16th is an early evening show at World Cafe Live in Philadelphia.
An all-ages show?
Huh?
An all-ages show?
We do 18 plus so that we don't get any angry parents. But yeah, 18 plus.
And there's also another one, and I don't remember the name of it. Annie Abom puts on the Nutcracker. What does she call that?
She's
fabulous.
Is it the Slut Cracker?
She's actually doing the Pussy Show now.
Yeah, she's doing the Pussy Show now.
Oh, I saw the Pussy Show, which was
Red Light Cabaret is no more.
Yeah.
She's doing the Pussy Show. As far as the Nutcracker, I'm not sure if we're doing it.
There are lots of options for burlesque in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Oh, and they're all, I can't say they're all fabulous. I have seen some shows as use. But you know, those bad ones are like watching a clown perform burlesque. If you just go in there and just assume you're going to watch a clown, then you're okay.
Yeah. Well, our show this year is called It's a Wonderful Christmas Carol Life. No, It's a Wonderful Christmas Carol Story. And we took It's a Wonderful Life, A Christmas Carol, and A Christmas Story, mashed the three stories together, and added a lot of naked boobs. So you're welcome to come join.
And I'm going to totally self-promote here.
Yay!
Also. So I curate the burlesque showcase that's at Sisters Nightclub. So it is unique from most burlesque shows because it's also a dance party. We have dance party, then show. Dance party, then show. So it's a mixture. And it's the most diverse audience you could hope for in a burlesque show or a lesbian bar. So you get this nice mixture. But our next show is actually going to be the last Friday of December. I think that's the 28th. And we're going to be featuring Boylesque as well.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. And then I think we have some drag performers as well. So you get the whole spectrum, all sorts of people that want you to look at them.
So what I'd like to do is answer the question, they'll talk about the prevalence of strip joints in hard-boiled stories. Talk a little bit more about those. You had said to me outside about the burlesque of not only doing it, but the response.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, I think a burlesque performance is sometimes not even a performance by a dancer, but if you look at a lot of quotes in noir literature, like one of my favorite writers is Richard Prather. He did the Shel Scott novel stories, and he would write things when a woman walked into a room described by him, it was a performance whether she knew it or not. It was a woman, a doll, a sensational tomato who looked as if she just turned 21, but it obviously signaled for the turn a long time ago. She was tall and ugly, all over, maybe 5'7". She wore a V-neck drip, white blouse, as if she were the gal who invented cleavage, just for fun. I gawked, and she smiled with a plump red lips, beautiful lips that undoubtedly had said yes much more often than no. There's a performance, and the women didn't even know it.
But they do know it.
They do know it.
They do know.
I knew it.
Absolutely.
I fucking knew it. We've been hustled.
I mean, a woman, a burlesque performer, a femme fatale character, they know exactly what they're doing. When a woman enters a room, she knows exactly how to move her lips and move her body and talk to you in just a way that even with all her clothes on,
you're
desire
screwed.
Her. You're screwed.
You're doing it now, aren't you?
I've been doing it since I walked in. We're discussing literature, but it goes down to to reading people. When you're a stage performer, you're reading your audience. When you enter a room, you're reading the people that you talk to, who wants you to look at them, who doesn't want you to look at them, what they need. Do they need a small touch to make you do what
anything
you want them to do? I mean, it's to me, it's amazing. I mean, I love the psychology of desire. I love trying to figure out what somebody wants and how can I become that for you for just a minute.
And I think in the literature, in our literature, the man in the situation anyway is given no choice. I mean,
yeah.
He walked in, he's as soon as he gets on stage, he's a dead man.
Well, because you're men.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. You have no choices.
Honey, it's your world. I'm just living there.
But the trick is, we need you not to know that.
I'm in the inner circle now.
How many people here are writers of noir as opposed to just readers? So, about half? Am I seeing here? So what we're really offering you here is a lot of fodder, a lot of information that you can take and incorporate into your writing.
Can I steal Annie A-bomb for a character?
You may have, I don't know, does she
You might have
her
to
name?
Ask Annie A-bomb.
Yeah, I mean, what I would
what
do,
a great name.
You just
ask
go,
her.
You
That's
go
her
online,
name.
You find her, and you ask if you can use her. I'm sure she'll say yes, but generally using names, most burlesque performers, I mean, they love you to take their picture, and they love for you to use their names, but they really like to be asked.
Sure.
If they're not asked, they get their panties all in a bunch.
Informed consent.
And I can tell you how to contact.
Yeah, everybody's on Facebook.
And let me add, I also want to give a shout out to another phenomenal burlesque Philly name, Melissa Bang Bang.
Uh-huh.
come on.
who's got her name because of her really beautiful butt. She has this amazing butt and can do really incredible things with her butt cheeks.
The word is calipeaches.
And she would be introduced, and at the end of the show, the audience...
How do you spell that?
Bang, bang?
V-A-V-A-V-O-O-M.
For Q&A.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
We have some samples.
I didn't bring my stuff.
Well, she doesn't do it for free, so we're going to have to pass a hat.
Yeah. Sparkle fund. Here, one over here.
It's not actually a question. It's not actually a question. The comment that you made about feminism, I think it's definitely a female empowerment thing, because if you look at, like, Living Social and Groupon and all these things, they have striptease classes, intro to lap dance, they have pole dancing, and they're actually kind of fun. But it's definitely, I think, a female empowerment thing,
because
you get the choice to do it.
Yeah, I actually, one of my other lives is as a dance and fitness instructor, so I can vouch for that 100%. The classes that are the, you know, burlesque is in the name, or I teach a class called Flirty Girl, or, you know, there's a bunch of those things. And in fact, one of the gyms where I work at, they call it something, it's outrageously sexual, it's just, you know, like, sexy lady, something like that. And it's actually not even a sexy class, but, like, the fact that it's named that gives people this license that, like, okay, I can come in here and I'm not just going to be kicking and punching and doing burpees, I'm gonna get to unleash the goddess, or, you know, whatever. And the resurgence of, not resurgence, it's huge for the first time, really, pole fitness is huge, and how many friends I have whose full-time job is teaching pole dancing. And these are not as, some, like, half the instructors are former strippers, and half of them never were. They just, it is fitness. And all types of women gravitate to these classes, and they are getting a good workout, but it's all about being given license to just move the way you want to move and enjoy feeling sexy. And, you know, it's usually a very all-female space, so it's not for anybody else's entertainment necessarily, assuming that none of the other women are enjoying it, of course, but it's gotten to a point, there's actually some suggestion that pole dancing will eventually become an Olympic event. Because it's so huge, and if you have the time to look up the YouTube videos, yeah, of Miss Australia pole dancing, we actually have pole dancers at the Burlesque Showcase at Sisters. We had the Miss, what is it, the US Pole Fitness champion for 2010 performed at our showcase, and it's just outrageous. I mean, aside from the fact that legs are going as far apart as beyond you thought possible.
Two time zones.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's dancing, it's defying physics, it's swimming on a pole. It's amazing.
There's also a side, there's a girl named Jo Boobs. She's an amazing mover and shaker in the burlesque community.
I've taken her picture before.
Have you?
Yeah.
And the woman is incredible, and she's developed something called Pink Ribbon Burlesque, and it's free classes for women who, it goes under the umbrella of breast cancer, but basically it's anybody who has had any sort of surgery, not just mastectomies, but any sort of surgery where they need to reclaim their body, and they need to find that they are sexy again, that they are desirable. So, and that's starting to spread. I know that Michelle Lamour just started it in Chicago, and we're hoping to do a side of it here with Peekaboo to get women and men out who need their bodies back. So it's really great.
Can I get darker just a second? We sort of lumped in strippers and dancers with the noir writers and filmmakers on it. But the thing with a burlesque dancer, you can be a writer forever, but strippers have a shelf life.
Yep.
You guys talk about that a little bit.
You interviewed all those legends.
Satan's Angel.
Maybe.
I mean, there are still legends that are performing. We discussed Tempest Storm.
82 years old, still performing.
Still performing. One of the highest paid burlesque legends in the country. Satan's Angel, still performing. She's actually on a movie tour right now. I'm not going to say how old she is. She'd kill me. But
for the majority, I mean, and if you go to Burlesque Hall of Fame, which is once a year in Las Vegas, you see all of these amazing legends. I mean, I've watched them wheel legends out in wheelchairs, and they have two girls helping them up so that they can do one little, and then they sit back.
I saw Dixie Evans do that.
Some women are still performing in their original costumes. I mean, so
awesome.
there was a resurgence. Most of them went into retirement for 20, 30 years. And now all of a sudden there's a resurgence and there's this desire to talk to them. What was your life like? What did you feel about things? How did you date? Like it was, I mean, every single, they're the people that did pave the way. They took a retirement, now they have life again.
And pay the price too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But there's definitely, I mean, luckily, you know what, 20s the new 30s or 20s the new 40? I don't know. 40s the new 20? 40s the new 20?
Absolutely.
So our shelf life isn't quite as long, as short. But you are talking about something that has to do with your body, that has to do with image, that has to do with aging, which for so many of us is a very difficult for women to age in this country. So yeah, it's the same as it was. You make as much money as you can while you have time to do it, and then maybe you go on to the B stage, or you pull yourself back so you're never on the B stage.
Can I make like a huge, enormous departure for a moment? This is like absolute tangent. So I would also just like to mention, for anybody who is not familiar, because you reminded me when you mentioned Michelle Lamour from Chicago, is the phenomenon of naked girls reading. So. So this was started in Chicago, and the idea is you pick a theme from literature, and you have three or four women stand up on stage, completely naked except for heels, and read to you, and it's amazing. And we have it in Philadelphia now, and the next one is actually next Sunday. It's at Philomoka, the Mausoleum of Contemporary Art, and the theme for this one is Neil Gaiman. So if we have any Gaiman fans, and I bet I could get Miss Rose from Bravissimo Burlesque, who does it, to probably have a noir one.
Yeah, I'm sure she would love that.
Just putting that out there. So we could needle at her.
They could read from the Bible and it'd be sexy.
Yeah, probably. there's a
club, I think it's called the Manhattan Topless Girls Club or something like that. It's basically a bunch of girls who sit in Central Park topless, and one of the books that they were reading was Getting Off from Lauren's Fly. It was
all right.
6 months ago, something like that, but they read all these pulp books. Half of them happen to be hard case crime, but it's
With that scantily clad storytelling, Jessica Hicks has invited both Timmery and Lulu to her second venue on Monday. It's going to be above the Irish Pole at Sales Gillespie. And that is on 3rd Street between Market and Chestnut, and it will be from 8 p.m. to midnight.
Grab us when you're done, so write it down. That'd be great.
Yes. Anybody have any questions having to do with noir?
Actually, I have a
when I was, I write some noir novels. And when I was in civilian law enforcement in the late 60s in northeastern New Jersey, there was a pretty provable, identifiable link between women who worked in strip clubs and, if not absolute streetwalker prostitution, call girl level prostitution. Is that still a part at all of either burlesque or the strip club?
Well, I have to admit, I spoke to somebody recently, and I've got the information at home, who wrote a book and who did a study on that, and it's not true. And it actually wasn't always true either. It's just the media has projected that.
One of my favorite performers is Zoraida. She danced with snakes. And she was also a prostitute, but she also admonished the other dancing girls for giving away for free. Zoraida, she danced with Oscar and Elmo with snakes?
Right, yeah.
But she was a prostitute, but she charged for it. Well, I guess that's by definition what prostitution is.
I mean, but don't we all charge for it to some degree?
Right. We don't always ask for money. Sometimes a toaster or a microwave.
A lot of burlesque performers are still strippers, but there's no number that says, you know, this is what they are. There tends to be a crossover. You're comfortable with your body. It's a great way to make a living, and then keep yourself available to be doing all of your costuming and your producing and your booking and all of the stuff that you end up doing for free. So, I mean, stripping is still a great field for women to
right,
make.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily mean they prostitute.
No,
themselves.
It doesn't. No, absolutely not.
And I have the numbers and all that information at home.
Could you guys name some books or movies that are really awesome burlesque movie?
I had brain surgery back in February, so somebody loaned me the DVD of the Brain That Wouldn't Die. You know, it was a story of a guy who saved a beautiful woman's head, his girlfriend's head, and went out to strip clubs to try and find the perfect body to attach to it.
Oh my God!
It's awesome. All kinds of strip club stuff.
That's
noir. That's pretty noir.
Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind, and I don't know if this technically counts as noir, but there is a zombie stripper movie that Jenna Jameson's in, and it's actually quite fabulous.
There is
a horrifying lap dance. It's horrifying. It is the grossest. Their noises.
It gives you meaning to take it off.
Oh, yes. I don't know if that counts.
Stolen right here.
I was doing a little research on David Goodis or something I never did, but I was reading a lot of the newspaper articles from that period of the Tenderloin where he sent his characters often for burlesque shows and whatnot. And of course, at the time, Frank Rizzo, a famous character here in the Normal War, was the Cisco Kid. He was the police guy at the time, a very macho guy. And he had a supposed affair with Blaze Starr, who was very famous.
Really?
Well, like the governor of Louisiana, too.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. She was in town, and Frank Rizzo, of course, denied that there was ever any affair, but she wrote that in her book that she had basically cut a deal with Frank Rizzo and slept with him, you know, and all this. And of course, he denied that. He absolutely denied it.
Why?
But everybody had to cut the deals with the law enforcement, you know, whether, you know, in one way or another, you know, buy them off.
You bring up the point of legitimacy. I think we all want burlesque and the sort of perception of it and the non-exploitation of it to be mainstream. But I work for a number of men's magazines, and I like the fact that it's still taboo and still sneered upon by certain members of the class.
Fair enough.
I think a certain amount of taboo works.
Gentlemen in the back.
Photographic book by a wonderful photographer named Susan Micellus. It was called Carnival Strippers. It was in the early 70s. She spent 3 years with this traveling group of strippers. It was in the South. And they would go from small town to small town, almost like a circus. They would put up a tent. The girls would come out. They'd have a 45 record player. And they would put their record on. And they would come out. And it was... You want to talk about noir, and it's black and white photographs.
Wow.
And in particular, she got to know the girls really, really well. And one of the best things about the book is these extended interviews with the dancers themselves, but also taking pictures of them over the 3 year period.
What and year was that?
It was early 70s,
I've got to get that.
I believe. And her name was Maceless, MISCLAS.
Carnival
she also did a great series of photographs about the Salvadoran War. An incredible photographer.
So the name of the book again, please?
Carnival Strippers.
Carnival Strippers.
That's kind of hard to find. You'll end up paying a lot of money for it. But it's an amazing book.
As far as recommendations for noir and burlesque and all that, I have to say that Screaming Mimi is a good one when it comes to that as a good backdrop. Gypsy Rose Lee is in that one, small role, and then she wrote a
G-string murders, right.
So I have yet to read that one.
Lou, you're here, you're taking notes, because we need a blog. We need a blog with the best for less, noir.
This is a little bit off the burlesque, but I believe it was in Larry's documentary on David Goodis, where he mentions that Goodis had a fetish for very dominant black women. The burlesque history is a little bit easier to find out about because these were legal businesses, so there's city records of them existing along with people being willing to share their recollections. even if they weren't there, they might have seen them. When it comes to aspects of BDSM and domination, there isn't that public history. I'm wondering if you guys or anyone in the room knows, how do you begin to research the reality of that kind of sex underground or cultural underground when there are no legal records to follow and people are not as willing to share their stories?
There are a few magazines around, like Exotique and other, that came out in the early 50s that were extremely underground. In fact, John Wiley, the guy that did the Sweet Gwendolyn cartoons, actually he immigrated from Australia to New York, and he had no baggage. All he had was a belt with a secret compartment with photos of women tied up in him.
Exotique,
and there was one called Stockings and Heels. These are things you bought at barbershops. These were low production pieces, but they're very collectible. And I also want to comment the word fetish gets used a little bit too literally. I think a fetish is when sexual gratification cannot happen without that kink. Because I mean, just because you like a woman's feet doesn't mean you have a foot fetish. Speaking from experience, but I was like, he's got a foot fetish. No, I just like her feet. I mean, I'm a freak or anything.
But the feet don't have to be there.
That's very noir. She had no feet.
Throw another like angle in from noir. I would think something like Gilda and the way Rita Hayworth performs with The Blame on Maine is very much in the burlesque tradition.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not specifically like fan dances and other aspects. And I think frequently where it shows up in noir is frequently in the female torch songs, where it is a hyper femininity in a space of performance where it's not only what they're singing but how their body's enacting the moment.
I'm wondering, since you all deal with sexual mores in
speak a little louder.
Since you're all dealing with sexual mores in one way or another, I'm wondering, what do you think of popular culture's approach to sex, particularly when it comes to women nowadays? Because my feeling is that we kind of, popular culture in the United States at least, peaked in the 1970s in terms of its approach to sex. I feel like we're going backwards. And everything has the guise of being open, but it's actually getting way more conservative as we advance.
There's kind of, I think, especially in pornography, there's a sameness. I mean, obviously the women are exploited, but I think the male taste in women is exploited. From an early age, as young boys, as we learn about sex through pornography, whether it's, you know, from our dad or from somebody's, you know, some of these uncles got some magazines spirited away. But I think that we're exploited too in being told what we're supposed to find attractive. I mean, women are told how to look, but men are told what to like. And if that were the case, we'd all be going for, like, you know, bleach blonde bimbos. They're like 19 years old, which is not my taste at all. You're learning a lot about me, aren't you?
And I think you hit on what is happening, especially with the most popular things, that with the increasing commodification and increasing like let's hit as many people as possible sort of idea, but because so much media is now created by people who are not professional, and there's so much independent media, you actually have even way more awesome options too. There's so much more. For example, queer porn now exists that does things that just you couldn't have found before, and the accessibility because of the internet now means that anybody can find it no matter where it's made. So what is pushed upon us, what you're going to see while you're waiting in line at the bank up on the screen, is getting more boring and getting more tame and getting more generic and vanilla. But what is possible is like anything now, and there's so much porn that it couldn't have existed before because it's like photoshopped and things like that. There are so many genres of porn. Just as a random example, a thing that I've lectured on before, some of the sexual subcultures of the internet include photoshopping to make two people who are right next to each other look like they're conjoined twins. Or, I mean, you would take a lot of makeup to do that otherwise. And, you know, the idea of a woman just going about her day and then all of a sudden she starts like popping out udders, and oh my god, she's got horns, and then she's got ears, and she turns into a cow. You can't, I mean, that would be really hard to shoot in real life. So you've got one thing, but like the, like with all media, you have more options now. You have more bad and more good also.
Well, I think we talked a little bit about the resurgence of burlesque, and my belief is that more people are coming to shows and more people want to see this type of sexuality because they are getting so inundated with way too much. I mean, to me, I'm not shy by any means, but there are things that I see that make me go, oh my, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to see the desire and the tease that comes along with a woman or a man. And I think that that's why we're getting a lot, that's why you're seeing people go to these live performances. They're stepping away from their computers, they're stepping away from their television, and they're seeing real women and real men on the stage doing real things. We're not Photoshopped.
It's like what Tom Waits said. He was driving in Times Square one time, and he saw a movie listed that had seven X's on it. He said, well, seven X's, all he could picture was women rolling around with no skin on.
It sounds like something sweet and nostalgic and innocent and throwback.
It is. I mean, I'm not going to be nearly as, I mean, don't answer this, but I'm not going to be nearly as sexy if I just stand up, take off my clothes, and stand and talk to you naked. Eventually, you're going to stop looking at me naked. But if I take the next half an hour, little by little, of having this conversation and taking off piece by piece by piece by piece.
I won't stop.
I'll be here all night.
I mean, I could keep you here for 2 hours. And you might actually
see, that's a great selling point. You know, I mean, sex with the New Republic.
I know what it's so funny. I just thought of it. I wish that I would have integrated that into this panel.
next year.
Remember this, next year. The other thing is that the audience has changed. It's become the sexual agency for internet, for everything, has now females are being given permission, as we all know from 50 Shades of Grey. All of a sudden, females are reading things that they didn't read before or didn't read in public. Now it's almost like a badge to carry around that book. So it's very, very interesting. And once you get women into that, share that joke.
It's kind of like softcore porn, which I think is like taking a bath with your socks on.
Story of O. Go read Story of O.
Yeah, much better.
Please, yes.
Oh, we only have 5 minutes. How many more questions? Who didn't ask one yet?
I just wonder if you, related to what you just said, if you'd speak about the idea of the satire in burlesque. You mentioned that earlier, I think.
Well, there's always been a bit of political satire in burlesque. I mean, one of the things that you brought up is you can't necessarily badmouth your government terribly, but you can make fun of it. I can say whatever I want on stage as a joke. I can put the American flag on my puss and on my tits, and everybody's gonna think that it's great. burlesque through the time has changed through the years. I mean, a lot of shows that you go to now, you're gonna see just classic striptease, but there are burlesque that still integrate what it really was the baggy pants comedy, was live music, was singing and dancing, was production numbers, and was political. Mm-hmm. So.
It still exists. I mean, it's still out there.
Right.
I killed Rick Santorum in effigy one time at a show.
I saw that show!
It was a Dexter thing also, so.
So that, I don't know if we actually answered the question of talk about the prevalence of strip joints in hard-boiled stories. It doesn't matter.
We pose a few new ones, I guess.
For somebody who it does matter, come up afterwards and we'll talk about it.
And I think next year after this panel, we'll do it. We'll strip tease and talk, and then we go on a field trip. All of the strip clubs, we can show the levels of titty bar in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I can take you to some places.
Strip con.
High five.
You saw it here first, folks.
Okay. Any more questions? And is there anything else anyone here on the panel would like to add to this?
I'd just like to thank Blue Box for putting us as a wonderful event. And let me send a round of applause to our kids.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Please check out more from sexwithtimory.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimory@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimare@gmail.com. And thank you.